Welcome back, everyone, to another exciting edition of the Jewish Experience radio program. Hey, we have so much to get to today. I don't know if we're going to get it all in. I really hope we can. Our special guests today are internationally renowned scholar, author, translator, Rabbi Adin Steinsaltz, and musician Andy Statman's going to be with us. Both of these people are going to be in Pittsburgh this coming week, but you will be the first to hear from them this week on the Jewish Experience. Hi, I'm Hirsch DeLynn, and now that the world was created, flooded, and repopulated, our attention now turns to Avram, who once was told, go to your innermost self, move away from your will, from your feelings, and from your intellect, to the desire that I reveal to you. And Avram became Avraham, the first Jew. In other words, Avram was willing to give it all up for the sake of his Creator. Not only this once, but 10 times, and he proved to God that he was worthy, that his descendants, the Jews, would receive the land that God promised to him, and his descendants would be as numerous as the stars. So, keeping up with the tradition started by Avraham, the father of nations, we're still getting ready for the Shabbos, just like our forefathers thousands of years ago, and we here at the Jewish Experience will be right there with you, getting you in the mood for Shabbos Lech Lecha with Rabbi Meir Goldwasser, Rabbi Yosef Eisen, Ms. Deborah DeLynn, Chef Chaim Reiser, and Musical Moish. We'll have your community announcements and mazel tovs, along with current news, fresh from Israel National Radio, coming up in the half hour. This week's program is sponsored in part by Burton Hirsch Funeral Home and by Artistic Photography, when you want to get it right the first time. By the way, they also sponsor the Jewish Experience Radio Program's website, jewishexperienceradio.com. Stop by for a visit and stay for a Jewish experience. Candlelighting time this week is no later than 4:48 p.m. So, Moish, I understand you have Andy Statman coming on the program. Didn't he used to play with you?
Yes, that's right. He performed at numerous weddings with the Moshe Pekar Orchestras over in the New York area.
And then finally he grew up and moved out on his own.
Absolutely. Definitely a one-of-a-kind, outstanding musician.
Unbelievable. It's like a kid leaving the house and going out on his own.
That's absolutely. And we'll be interviewing him coming up shortly. So let's get started. Here's Nagino Orchestra. This is a golden oldie recorded in 1984 entitled Nigun Mushka.
La 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 la
you've been enjoying the music of Andy Statman. And joining us here on the show is Andy Statman himself. Andy, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
You know, Andy, it's been a while since you and me got together and did a couple of gigs there in New York. Tell me, what are you up to now?
Well, I've been doing a lot of concertizing, a lot of recording, composing, and keeping busy.
Mm-hmm. I understand you're coming to Pittsburgh on the 17th to do a concert. Why don't you tell us a little about it, and what's bringing you to Pittsburgh?
Well, we're coming to Pittsburgh actually to play two concerts, one on the 17th and one on the 19th.
Tell me, Andy, when you do a concert, how many people do you usually perform with? How many people in the band?
I generally work with a trio, and occasionally work with duets or do a solo.
Uh-huh. And what would the trio consist of?
The trio would be an upright bassist and a percussionist, and very often I do duets just with percussionist is a drummer as well as percussionist, and very often I do duets with either myself and percussion or myself and bass.
Uh-huh. And
solo is just me.
Uh-huh. And what instruments are you playing yourself?
I play clarinet and mandolin.
Could you describe the kind of music or the kind of performance you put on?
Generally, we play two strains of music. One is Jewish, and the second would be more of American roots music. And I guess the third would be my own compositions, which reflect both. And in terms of the Jewish music, we're mainly playing Hasidic melodies, Nigunim, or maybe some klezmer tunes, which are pretty much the same as Hasidic Nigunim. And we interpret them in our own way. There's lots of improvisation. The same with American roots music, whether it's blues, bluegrass tunes, we interpret them in our own way. And sometimes the melodies can go, the improvisations can go along, as long as 15, 20 minutes. So what we seek to do is go on a real excursion with the music and explore, through interpretation and improvisation, different facets of the melody and what, the potential is in the actual melody. Sometimes we'll just take the melody directly. It really depends on how we feel at the moment. And, we're looking to go on a journey with the music and have some sort of experience with the music.
Tell me, Andy, following your appearances here in Pittsburgh, what is your next gig? What are your next things you're doing after that?
We're doing a bunch of concerts in and around New York, and then I know I'm going out to California to do some more recording. I've got some records coming out off this road.
Sounds like fun.
Yeah, it is.
Wow, wonderful. Well, Andy, we're looking forward to seeing you here in Pittsburgh. That'll be Thursday, November 17th at 8 p.m. at the Community Day School Auditorium. That's 6424 Forward Avenue in Squirrel Hill. Andy, thanks a lot for being on our show.
Thanks for having me.
as we said when you opened the show, as Abraham goes out, so does the neshama go out as it leaves Shemayim and enters the body. With the message again, here's Rabbi Meir Goldwasser.
This week's Sedra opens with Hashem's command to Avram. Go out of your land and your birthplace and your father's house, unto the land which I will show you. One of the 10 difficult tests with which Hashem tested Avram was this command, to leave his home and go to a strange land. Avraham's journey is compared to the enforced journey and descent of the divine soul from the spiritual realms into the physical body. Our sages said that each and every soul was in the presence of Hashem before coming down to this earth. This emphasizes the essential nature of the soul, its holiness and purity, and its being completely divorced from everything material and physical. Nevertheless, it was the Creator's will that the soul, which is truly a part of the divine above, should leave its home and its father's house, and should journey and descend into the physical and coarse world, to be confined within and united with a physical body for scores of years, in a state which is absolutely repulsive to its very nature. All this is for the purpose of a divine mission which the soul has to fulfill, to refine and elevate the physical body and its environment through a life of Torah and mitzvahs. This is one of the objectives of our davening each and every day. We recount the praises and the glory of Hashem to impress upon ourselves Hashem's greatness. This should help us to serve Hashem throughout the entire day and fulfill our mission here on earth. In this way, not only our soul is involved in our davening, but the physical body as well.
Will Israel ever see an end to violence? How will the war against Iraq's insurgents impact Israel? Will changes on the Supreme Court have any effect on the Jewish community? Is anti-Semitism in Europe on the rise? What can be done about it? For a look behind the headlines, read the Forward, the nation's Jewish newspaper. The Forward reveals the personalities, motivations, and histories that are fueling the news abroad. The Forward also provides an in-depth look at issues affecting us at home, with comprehensive reports on everything from politics and religion to culture and the arts. It even has its own matchmaking section for Jewish singles. Try 4 weeks free, then be billed $24.95 for another 26 issues. Not satisfied? Just write cancel on the bill and keep the first 4 issues free.
Call now for the Forward, 800-992-3333. That's 800-992-3333. Don't forget, for your next Simcha, it's Artistic Photography. That's artistic-photography.com by Mordechai Saxon when you want to get it right the first time. Now, back to the music with Moshe Papar.
Eliyahu Hagilati Ibn Heda Yavoy Eileinu Ihi Mashiach Ben David Eliyahu Hanovi Eliyahu Hakishki Eliyahu Hagilati Ibn Heda Yavoy Eileinu Ihi Mashiach Ben David Nechi shoy leyach lachem, shoy leyach lachem es Eliyahu hanavi. Lifnei bo yoim Hashem, hagodol vehanoyira. Veheishiv leibo beisalbonim, veleibonim alav yisom. Veheishiv leibo beisalbonim, veleibonim alav yisom. Eliyahu hanavi, Eliyahu hatishbi. Eliyahu Hagilati Ibn Heda Yavoy Eileinu Ibn Mashiach Ben David Eliyahu Hanavi Eliyahu Hatishbi Eliyahu Hagilati Ibn Heda Yavoy Eileinu Ibn Mashiach Ben David
Eliyahu Hanavi, Elijah the Prophet. If you have ideas for future musical selections on our show, don't be shy. Just email me. That's Music Man Moshe Pekar, or as Hirsch would say, Yesh Man.
That's for sure.
That's Key Player.
He's the Yesh Man.
KeyPlayer@Hotmail.com. That's KeyPlayer@Hotmail.com regarding musical selections, and we'll do our best to play them on a future show.
All right, great. And now let's turn for a moment in Jewish history with the author of Miraculous Journey. Here's Rabbi Yosef Eisen.
It is commonly believed that the State of Israel is the first independent Jewish country in nearly 2,000 years. However, incredibly enough, a powerful Jewish kingdom known as Khazaria flourished about 1,300 years ago and lasted several hundred years. In the 8th century, a people known as Khazars converted to Judaism and created a nation in a large area of the Caucasus, what is today southern Russia. According to the 12th century Spanish scholar Rabbi Yehuda Halevi in his book The Khuzari, the Khazar King Bulan invited representatives of the Jewish, Christian, and Islamic faiths to debate the merits of their respective beliefs, planning to adopt the religion of the winner. Details of the debate are recorded in the Kuzari, along with Bulan's decision to convert his kingdom to Judaism. Although differing opinions exist among historians as to whether this disputation actually took place, based on archaeological evidence, all agree that a Jewish Khazar kingdom existed. The Khazars followed traditional Judaism and had contact with other Jews. The Khazar king, known as the Kagan, by law had to be a Jew. The Khazars waged war with surrounding nations, frequently emerging victorious. However, by the 10th century, constant battles with Russian tribes greatly weakened Khazaria and the kingdom collapsed. Many Khazar Jews were killed, while others converted to their conqueror's beliefs. Nevertheless, most Khazars retained their Jewish faith and joined other Jewish communities, particularly in Poland and Ukraine. Today, the Khazars are integrated into Jewish life and are unrecognizable.
Now, from the largest independent news organization in the Middle East, here's Ernie Singer with Israel National News.
Prime Minister Ariel Sharon is expected to meet with newly elected Labor Party Chairman Amir Peretz at the Knesset on Monday and discuss the possibility of jointly presenting a bill to advance national elections. They are expected to recommend holding the election sometime between February and April. Sources close to Sharon said there was no point in extending the tenure of a government already suffering from a rebellion in the Likud party now that Labor is head by Peretz, who promised in his campaign to break up Sharon's national unity government. Quoting one Sharon associate, "The main reason for keeping the government together until now is passing the 2006 state budget, but there is no chance that Peretz will let it pass." Sharon's associate said that he was excited about the prospects of facing off in the election against a candidate with no diplomatic experience and, in their words, extremist views on diplomatic and socioeconomic issues. The prime minister will have to decide over the next few days whether he intends to run in the Likud party or form a new party, the Likud secretariat meeting this coming week to start preparations for the election. Former finance minister Benjamin Netanyahu calling Peretz and telling him he was impressed by the determination he showed in the race. Sources close to Netanyahu say that Peretz's victory was helpful for Netanyahu, because now the election will focus on economic issues. Outgoing Labor Chairman Shimon Peres has not decided on his political future. He'll take a few days off from party politics to decide whether to answer Peres's request to remain an active member of Labor, retire from politics, or quit Labor and form a new party with Prime Minister Sharon. Peres not attending Labor faction meetings Friday and Monday. Several family members and confidants are trying to persuade him to retire. Peres has spoken of the problematic vote results in the primary. He started procedures to appeal the election results, but his son Chemi dissuaded him from the move. According to a poll in the Haaretz daily, if the Knesset elections were held now, the Labor Party would increase its power significantly under a number of scenarios. For the first time in a long time, 82% of traditional Labor voters say they would consider voting for their party again. According to the poll, if Labor led by Peretz contended against Likud headed by Sharon, Labor would win 28 mandates as compared to the current 21, Likud 39. If Sharon left Likud and founded a new party with Peretz, the two veteran leaders would win 32 mandates and Labor 27, while a Likud led by Benjamin Netanyahu would win 25 seats. Under both scenarios, Shinui loses much of its strength and wins between 6 to 7 mandates. Shas would also face a significant drop in its electorate, as the poll predicts it would lose half its seats and be left with 5 to 6 mandates. Meretz, the poll predicts, would lose half its seats as well and would remain with a meager 3 mandates. Shas, Shinui, and Meretz meeting in reaction to the Labor election and the possibility of early elections. Yossi Sarid telling the leftist Meretz party that it should join Labor if Peretz proves he can lead the ideological line he has advocated. 30 current and former high-ranking American officials in Israel to meet with an equal number of Israeli colleagues to discuss the shared challenges facing both countries in the 21st century. The week-long American-Israeli dialogue kicking off Saturday night with a gala at the King David Hotel in Jerusalem. The American list topped by Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice and former U.S. President Bill Clinton and his senator wife Hillary. Israel going on high security alert again, with current and former world leaders here for events associated with the 10th anniversary of the assassination of Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin. King Abdullah II of Jordan canceling his visit in light of this week's terrorist bombing in Amman. The Israeli public is beginning to doubt the government's assertion that Yigal Amir single-handedly killed Rabin. Learn about the facts which would condemn a major Israeli political figure on Weekend Edition with Tamar Yona and Malka Fleischer. Sunday is the anniversary of the passing of the biblical matriarch Rachel, or Rachel in Hebrew, and our two women of valor are taking part in one of many visits scheduled for Rachel's tomb on the southern edge of Jerusalem. Weekend Edition returns next week, 3 to 5 p.m. Israel time, on IsraelNationalRadio.com. Shabbat is Yura, the 10th day of Cheshvan on the Jewish calendar, and the forecast from the Israel National Radio Weather Center. Clear with seasonal temperatures through Sunday, slightly warmer on Monday. In Jerusalem on Friday, 20 degrees centigrade, 68 Fahrenheit. At the Red Sea and the Dead Sea, 27 degrees centigrade, 81 Fahrenheit. The Golan Heights, 19 degrees centigrade, 66 Fahrenheit. Tel Aviv, 23 degrees centigrade, 73 Fahrenheit. Haifa, 21 degrees centigrade, 70 Fahrenheit. Beersheba, 25 degrees centigrade, 77 Fahrenheit. Ernie Singer, Israel National Radio.
And this week's Mazel Tovs, Rabbi and Mrs. Ellie Rosenfeld on the birth of a baby boy.
Mazel Tov, Ellie and Sterni.
And Rabbi and Mrs. Yisrael Rosenfeld on the birth of a grandson.
Mazel Tov.
We're all getting up in that age bracket over there.
Yep.
Rabbi and Mrs. Moshe Isaacs on the marriage of their daughter, Sira.
Mazel Tov.
And Mr. and Mrs. Hugh and Ann Greathouse on the engagement of their son, Michael, to Danielle Steiner.
Mazel Tov.
Mr. John David and Miriam Solomon on the birth of a grandson.
Keep them coming.
And, of course, Erwin and Judy Stein on the birth of a granddaughter. And we should only continue to have simchas, simchas, and simchas, and more simchas. Anyway, the events around the community this week, the Judaic Library at Lubavitch Center is open to the public on Sundays, expanded hours, 12 to 4:30 p.m., Wednesdays, 3 to 4 p.m., and 7 to 8 p.m., and also on Motzei Shabbos, 1 hour after Shabbos ends, and that'll be open for 2 hours. Stop in and check out a book or two, or use the extensive research volumes available. Of course, Rabbi Adin Steinsaltz, one of the world's foremost Jewish thinkers and scholars, will be in Pittsburgh for an evening of learning and inspiration on Tuesday, November 15th at Lubavitch Center, 2100 Whiteman Street. Following the lecture, the rabbi will be signing his newest book, Learning from the Tanya, and in just a few minutes you'll get to hear Rabbi Steinsaltz. He'll be a guest on our program. The Alvin Weinberg Father and Son Learning Program at the Pittsburgh Kollel starts after this Shabbos at 7:15 p.m. for boys in grades 1 through 8. Warm pizza and prizes. And due to construction, you'll use the rear entrance. The meeting of Food Addicts in Recovery Anonymous meets at the Aleph Institute every Sunday evening from 7 to 8:30 p.m. The program's a recovery group for people who cannot control their eating and or their weight. For more information, call Ilana at 412-422-2224. And, of course, as you heard earlier, Andy Statman is going to be in Pittsburgh Thursday, November 17th at 8 p.m. at Community Day School Auditorium, 6424 Forward Avenue in Squirrel Hill. If you'd like to have your Mazel Tovs on our program, please call 412-979-5770 or email jewishexperience@verizon.net by noon on Monday for that week's program. And don't forget, candlelighting time this week is no later than 4:48 p.m. On November 17th, Rabbi Adin Steinsaltz, a world-renowned scholar, teacher, writer, mystic, and social critic, will be speaking at the Lubavitch Center this Tuesday, November 15th at 8 p.m. on the subject of a mystical approach to daily life. He's best known for his monumental translation of the Jewish Talmud. He joins us today on The Jewish Experience. Welcome, Rabbi.
Thank you. Bye.
Yes, Rabbi. You're embarked on a national tour to promote your new book, Learning from the Tanya, which is the second volume in your series. With other English books out explaining the Tanya, what is your series, and more specifically this text, add to what has already been done?
One of the things that makes a difference between, say, many other cultures and Jewish culture is that if you are a part of the Jewish culture, you always claim that you don't do anything new.
Good. Okay, that's true. It all comes from Sinai. You say in your book that the Tanya is not only, the fundamental works of Hasidim, it is also one of the greatest books of moral teaching of all time. What is so essential about the Tanya that we would be morally deficient without it?
For most people, there is no way of solving permanently the problematics of good and evil within themselves.
And Tanya clarifies that.
Tanya clarifies it, and I say most books of morality heretic, the all or nothing system.
Okay.
This has this in the Tanya. You have a different way, which in, on a theoretical level, it gives some possibility for people to find a way for themselves, to find a way of solving their internal problems. And that's in the very, very important, as I say, yes, almost unique in world literature, I would say.
Okay.
This kind of an approach.
So the Tanya is sometimes referred to as the Sefer Shel Benonim, the book of the average people that are busy fighting their evil inclinations. But the Tanya also says that a Benoni never actually sins. So where does that place the great many of us in the world?
Well, first of all, Benonim is not the average people. The intermediate people.
Mm-hmm.
It's people that are intermediate between what I call between a saint and a sinner.
Right. So, but they've never sinned. So, where does that put the rest of us?
Of course, it's the rest of us in the big group of sinners,
mm-hmm.
which is a very respectable big group. If you count by votes, it will possibly they will always outvote anybody else. Let me just say that in the Talmud, which is a very different book. He speaks about the world, about heaven that is bigger than the world, and he speaks that heaven is 1 in 60 of hell,
mm-hmm.
which means there is enough space there for lots of people.
Right. Okay. Good. Well, will the people that buy and read your book have enough information before them to understand the depths of applied Kabbalah, or should they still try to find a teacher to learn with?
Look. I suppose my book is readable. I try to make everything as possible as mm-hmm. readable. It is not the book is not writing about Kabbalah in any professional level.
Okay.
And surely not in the non-professional popular way that is done now. So basically, it's a book of morality. It is built very much on Kabbalistic notions, which are explained in the book as much as it is as important to understand.
Okay, so this is contained in itself. You can actually, one could read it and learn from it without having to resort.
You can learn from it, and as I say, it will never be as easy to read as a detective novel.
Sure. Okay. Can you give us a quick update now on your work in Russia? How is that going? Has it been successful? What is your next project?
It is a big work. It is not ending. The situation is there. You see, almost beginning from the very from basics or less than that. That is a kind of a. In spiritually speaking, it was worse than the Holocaust.
Mm-hmm.
Worse than the Holocaust in the fact that what remained after the what I call the Stalinist regime is very little, very very little.
So you're really starting from the ground up.
From the ground up, and as I say, in many ways, from a matter of recreating a life. Because there was no way of knowing who is who and any kind of a definition. People that are Jewish don't know that they are Jewish,
right.
Vice versa.
Mm-hmm. So now, switch gears a little bit here. In your travels, I'm sure you've had some dealings where you've run up against the Kabbalah Center. In your discovery, I mean, who are they really? And do you see them affecting your work in disseminating authentic Kabbalah?
Well, I think it's a very non-authentic thing. It's a kind of a perversion of Kabbalah.
All right, we'll leave it at that. Now, does the Tanya, in your view, have relevance to non-Jews as well? And how so?
Look, it has relevance because those ideas that I spoke about have relevance for every human being. You see, the problem of good and evil is not a specific Jewish problem.
Okay.
Human problem. Mm-hmm. And pondering about it, fighting with oneself, fighting with life, is a very, very important question. It's not just a matter for one type of a person.
Sure.
We as Jews are, at least let's put it this way, we are supposed to be far more involved.
Mm-hmm.
But other people in the world, as they are human beings, they have this kind of involvement. The problem of body and soul, of good and evil, of the world and human existence.
Well, Rabbi, thank you very much for taking time out to be with us today. We here at the Jewish Experience wish you much hatzlacha in your work. Again, you can hear Rabbi Steinsaltz speak at the Lubavitch Center November 15th at 8 p.m. on the mystical approach to daily life, where he will sign copies of his new book, Learning from the Tanya.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. And now, back to the music with Moshe Papar.
הדרך בכל ובייסי ויין כיסו היום יחנקים לבטח דרך בכל ובייסי ויין כיסו היום בייסים יין תלבו כמו שוי אמר זה כמו צוי ימיני נוי בייסים יין תלבו כמו שוי אמר זה כמו צוי ימיני נוי פרס דומה מכל ויצוי מריס נכון נוי דלכון
That was Yossi Goldstein and a Chabad wedding melody on the J.E.
Now it's time for the Jewish Experience Feminine Perspective. This is a segment that even I learned something from. Here once again is my daughter, Devorah DeLynn.
Our sages tell us, Hakina, Hatava, v'hakavod, Motzi'in ha'adam min ha'olam. Jealousy, desire, and honor can remove a man from the world. One must always bear in mind that the things we have in this world are only there because they are presents from Hashem. If a person starts giving themselves credit for the things they have, they will start desiring things, wanting honor, and will be driven to jealousy. A person must keep in mind that Hashem gave us physical things only to use them to serve Him. If they are used improperly, they can spur a person to attaining these negative traits, chas v'shalom. Vayisa Lot Mikedem, and Lot traveled towards the east. In Parshas Lech Lecha, this week's Parsha, Avram advises Lot to find another place to live, and wherever Lot chooses, Avram will go somewhere else. However, if we look a little closer at the words, we can find that by Lot agreeing to move away from Avraham, at the same time, he was always moving away from Hashem. How do we know this? One of the ways we refer to Hashem is Kadmon Shel Olam, the first in the world. The word Kadmon is very similar to the word Kedem, thus hinting that when Lot journeyed away from Avraham, in truth, he was also journeying away from Hashem. Lot chooses to live in the city of Sodom. Sodom was a place that was known for its lack of hospitality and the corruption of its judges. For example, if someone beat somebody else's wife and caused her to miscarry, then the judges ruled that the attacker must impregnate the woman again. And when a pauper came to Sodom asking for bread, instead the people would give him money marked with their names on it. So when the pauper died from lack of food, people would come and take back their coins. Eliezer, the servant of Avram, once came to Sodom. Upon entering the city, he was beaten until his blood ran. He took his attackers to court, and the judges ruled that since the attacker made him bleed, an accepted medical practice at the time, then he would have to pay them for it. Eliezer then took a stone from the ground and threw it at the judge, saying, "If the judge pays me for this damage, then I will pay my attackers." How did these people come to do such terrible things? At the time of Sodom's birth, Hashem blessed the city with food, gold, and silver. The citizens, forgetting that it was Hashem who gave them these gifts, were worried that people would come and take their treasures away. Therefore, they decreed very harsh decrees upon outsiders and even upon themselves, just so their money was intact. Can one imagine the importance of praising Hashem? It is only through regular thanksgiving that we reinforce every day that everything in this world belongs to Hashem. Our tefillah, davening, as well as our blessings on food remind us every day that everything we have belongs to Hashem. Since we women have a big portion in the chinuch of our children, make sure to implant this midah of gratitude to Hashem. By doing so, we will reach a level of humility that is required in true service of Hashem, and will hasten the coming of Mashiach, when justice will be carried out in the proper way and all negative traits will be eradicated. If you have any questions or comments regarding this or previous segments, please email me at jewishexperience@verizon.net. Have a good Shabbos.
Shalom ba'olam, mitzakar, ha
And Tzion B'mishpat Tipadeh.
Now it's time for the king of the kosher kitchen, that famous chef, Chaim Reisner. And you can find out more about him at chaimskosherkitchen.com. Chaim?
Thanks, Hirsch. For this week's Parsha Lech Lecha, I thought we would prepare for our Malava Malka Spanish omelets with green peas and white rice. This recipe should serve four. So here we go. For the Spanish omelet, you'll need to peel and slice the next four vegetables. One large Spanish onion, one red bell pepper, one green bell pepper, and one chili pepper. Then you'll need three cloves of garlic, peeled and chopped. You want to wash eight white button mushrooms and slice them thin. Add three whole bay leaves, four tablespoons of extra virgin olive oil, one teaspoon of sea salt, a half teaspoon of ground black pepper, one teaspoon of chili powder, one teaspoon of ground cumin, and you'll need 2 cups of marinara tomato sauce prepared ahead, 8 eggs checked and beaten, and optionally 2 cups of shredded mozzarella cheese. To prepare, using a 12-inch saute pan, add all of the above items except for the eggs and the sauce and the cheese. Saute for 6 minutes on high heat, then add the sauce and simmer for 10 minutes. Remove from the stove and set aside. Using a 10-inch saute pan, add some oil or butter, then enough eggs for one person. Cook for 2 minutes. Add some cooked vegetables to one side of the omelet, then add cheese, which is optional. Fold over the open side of the omelet onto the cheese and cook for 3 more minutes until the omelet has been well cooked, and then you'll want to serve that with green peas and rice. And that's all there is, Hirsch. That's all there is to it. Have a wonderful, wonderful Shabbos. Guess what? And you made it. See you next week.
All around us, life is moving faster and faster. Things are changing all the time, but it's a comfort to know that in your time of need, that at Burton Hirsch Funeral Home, the Jewish tradition continues. Burton Hirsch Funeral Home has served the Pittsburgh Jewish community since 1947 and has recently remodeled its entire facility to better serve you. Burton Hirsch Funeral Directors are members of the Jewish Funeral Directors Association, and they work closely with area rabbis to ensure that your needs as a Jewish family are totally met. They're so concerned about meeting those total needs that they meet with area rabbis on a regular basis. They've reduced the cost of a funeral. They have packages
specifically for your synagogue in your area, and it pays to check it out because you can save quite a bit. Their attentive and compassionate guidance results in treating each family as their own. And Deborah Price, the funeral home supervisor, was born and raised in Pittsburgh, and she really wanted to come back here, and she's working very, very, very hard to meet the needs of the Jewish community in Pittsburgh, especially with regard to Price. Did you know that Burton Hirsch is also involved with community educational programs to ensure that Jewish families know what to do to have a proper burial? So in your time of special need, call Squirrel Hill's only Jewish funeral home, Burton Hirsch, at 412-521-2600. That's 412-521-2600. And they welcome your request to visit and tour their state-of-the-art facilities. Burton Hirsch Funeral Home, proud sponsors of the Jewish Experience, 412-521-2600. Deborah Price, supervisor. Don't forget, for your next Simcha, it's Artistic Photography. That's artistic-photography.com by Mordechai Saxon when you want to get it right the first time. Here's Rabbi Goldwasser with a very heartwarming story about the beauty of simple people. Rabbi?
Before the Baal Shem Tov became known as a great tzaddik, he would frequently visit small rural Jewish communities. In the marketplace of those communities, he would gather around him the plain Jewish folk, men, women, and children, and relate to them stories. He would explain the story to them at length, so that the moral would be firmly impressed on the minds of the people. One time, the Baal Shem Tov came to a town where he was very impressed with the sincerity and honesty of the people. The people were unlearned because of no fault of their own. On a Shabbos, the people would come every Shabbos early in the morning and recite the entire book of Tehillim. Later on in the afternoon, they would again meet and once again recite the entire book of Tehillim. The Baal Shem Tov noticed that these people seemed to be troubled, and he asked the reason for this. They answered that it hadn't rained in many days, and the crops were dying in the field. The Baal Shem Tov contacted a few other hidden tzaddikim, and they came to the town. Together, they beseeched Hashem to have mercy on these sincere people. The sky became cloudy, and right after that, there was a downpour. It seemed rather miraculous, for the crops that were dying in the field seemed to take on a new breath of life. The people were very thankful to Hashem for this miracle, and they decided that the following Shabbos they would call Shabbos HaGodol, the Great Shabbos, and this Shabbos not only would they recite the Book of Tehillim twice, but they would get together in the shul around Shalashudas time in the afternoon to recite the Book of Tehillim a third time. Also, they would give treats out to the children and explain to them the kindness that Hashem had done for them. This is the beauty of the very sincere and honest people and their great affection and thankfulness to Hashem. This is Rabbi Meir Goldwasser wishing you all a good Shabbos.
And as we put the wraps on another Shabbos Lech Lecha edition of the Jewish Experience radio program, a few reminders. The Judaic Library at Lubavitch Center is open to the public on Sundays, Wednesdays, and Motzei Shabbos. You want to stop in and check out a book or two. Rabbi Adin Steinsaltz, as you heard, is going to be in Pittsburgh on Tuesday, November 15th at Lubavitch Center, 2100 Whiteman Street. That's Tuesday, November 15th. And the Alvin Warrenberg Father and Son Learning Program at the Pittsburgh Kollel starts after this Shabbos. Grades 1 through 8 for boys, pizza and prizes, and don't forget to use the rear entrance. Don't forget the meeting of Food Addicts in Recovery Anonymous, meets at the Aleph Institute every Sunday evening from 7 to 8:30. And you can call Alana for more information on that, 412-422-2224. And don't forget, if you'd like to have your Mazel Tovs and events on our program, give us a call at 412-979-5770 or email jewishexperience@verizon.net by noon on Monday for that week's program. And finally, Andy Statman's going to be in Pittsburgh on Thursday evening, November 17th at 8 p.m. at Community Day School on Ford Avenue in Squirrel Hill. So, as the Sabbath approaches, I want to be sure to thank our faithful and cutting-edge staff, Rabbi Meir Goldwasser, Rabbi Yosef Eisen, MusicalMoish.com, Dr. Michael Shulman, Chef Chaim Reiser, and Ms. Devorah DeLynn for another outstanding show. And don't forget, candlelighting time this week is no later than 4:48 p.m. Until next week, I'm Hirsch DeLynn. Have a wonderful and restful Shabbat.
Shabbat Shalom. Malachi Elyon, Malachi Elyon.